When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, this is Bridget.
And this is Annie.
And you're listening to Stuff Mom Never Told You. Now today, we're talking about the idea of, quote, overcoming disability. This is a phrase I heard quite a bit after the death of Stephen Hawking. A lot of folks were talking about how it was so great that he was able to, quote, overcome his disability to achieve something great. I kind of couldn't help thinking that this whole idea left a really rotten taste in my mouth.
Yeah, it was a heavy sigh. It was a heavy sigh moment for me as well. I'm a very big fan of Stephen Hawking. I read one fiction book and one science book. I alternate. And I went through all of his books, and I usually had to reread them twice because it's dense. It's dense. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about specifically today.
I mean, it kind of is, because he is someone who, I mean, his disability was a big part of who he was, and he was very vocal about that. And so, you know, when you're reading someone's contributions, like, he's talked about how he doesn't feel shame around being disabled, and that seems to be something that plays out in his work, I would say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And some numbers for you here. There were nearly 40 million Americans with a disability in 2015, representing 12.6% of the civilian non-institutionalized population, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. But how often do you see that in our media?
Not that often at all. We actually don't see nuanced depictions of disability in the media really at all. When you see someone who's disabled in a movie or on TV, either A, they're so tragic and they hate their lives and, you know, nothing good ever happens to them, or B, they only kind of exist to make the able-bodied person feel good. And so you're only really experiencing their situation via an able-bodied person. And one of the ways that I really sort of have a problem with this, that it plays out, is this idea of, quote, inspiration porn, where it's these promposal, beep, where it's these promposal videos where an able-bodied person will ask a disabled person to prom, and the subtext is, oh, he's so brave, that's so big of him, like, what a good person, and then you feel like a good person when you watch it because you're connecting with the person who is doing the, quote, like, brave act of charity.
Right.
But when you break that down, it's actually really insulting, because what you're saying is an able-bodied person couldn't possibly just want to go to prom with someone who's disabled. You know, it's like an insult when you unpack it.
Yeah, it really is. On a much lesser, much, much lesser scale, my junior year, this guy asked me out, I will say probably out of pity, and my mom thanked him in front of all of my classmates as if he had done this grand gesture just to do me the honor of asking me out, because no one else was going to, let's face it, Bridget.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't he just want, like, what your mom is really saying is that anyone who would take you out is doing an act of charity.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, and again, this is a very minor thing compared to what we're talking about today, but I felt terrible. I felt really bad. Oh my goodness, I guess, like, my value was less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Nobody wants to be somebody else's charity case. Nobody wants to feel like they're, you know, someone is spending time with them or doing something with them as an act of charity or to make themselves feel good. And it, again, why that's so problematic is because it totally, it's just almost invalidates the agency of the other person, right? So, like, people aren't asking the disabled person how they feel about this experience. You're only experiencing it through the lens of the able-bodied person, and that's not okay. It's completely taking away folks' agency.
After this quick break, we'll be joined by Annie Alaney, another Annie, but this one spelled a little bit differently than me. She is a YouTuber, a writer, artist, speaker, and advocate. Her video on why saying someone, quote, overcame their disability was super helpful in our understanding of why this perhaps well-meaning sentiment can actually be limiting.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Annie, I am so, so glad you could join us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So, you know, we live in kind of a depressing world where I feel like folks are thirsting for sort of uplifting content on social media. But do you ever feel like people with disabilities are kind of used as, I don't want to say inspiration porn, but inspiration porn, where, you know, a seemingly heartwarming story goes viral on social media and everyone is supposed to swoon, but actually when you break it down, it's actually a little bit gross?
Right. Well, that's actually, I don't know if you were aware or not, or if you just stumbled upon the word, but so yeah, inspiration porn is actually a coined term by disabled activist Stella Young. She brought it up the first time in her TED Talk. What was it called? I think it was called I'm Not Your Inspiration, something along those lines, about how, like, she, as a disabled child, would kind of, like, get these certain glamorized participation awards for stuff that maybe she didn't even participate in. And she could tell that it was because of her disability. So inspiration porn, I want to like try and like smash it into a small compact definition. It's essentially when, in a narrative, right? In a disabled person's narrative, a disabled person is being objectified for the quote inspiration of the non-disabled gaze or the abled gaze. So this happens a lot with like, I see it a lot with like stories of disabled people being asked out to prom. And you know, those promposals that go viral and things, and it may not even be the most glamorous or viral worthy promposal. It's just the fact that a disabled person was asked to prom and people start crying and all these things. And I have difficulty understanding that reaction to a degree. I can understand that people think that it's sweet to do nice things for people. Sure, but also I think that if people kind of really took a moment to think about what they're feeling and why, it's typically because they have a certain bias about disabled people and certain assumptions about disabled people. And so for them, it may be very surprising that somebody would ask a disabled person out to prom, and it would be for pity or for kindness and not because they genuinely want to be with them, which is a messed up assumption to make. that is inspiration porn. That is objectifying disabled people for their own inspiration, for their own jollies, for their own good feeling that they get for themselves. I think that's kind of where it comes from. They use the word porn specifically. Because it's kind of like a jerking off situation there.
It is.
It's for their own feel goods without really thinking about what it is that they're enjoying themselves to. Does that make sense?
Definitely. And I think the use of the word porn is so telling because it really is not about the disabled person. It's really about the able-bodied gaze feeling good, like, oh, I just watched a video of a disabled person being asked out to prom. The able-bodied person, that must be so big of them. Like, they're such a good person, and I'm a good person for feeling good at watching it. Like, everybody is getting off on feeling good, and no one is thinking about this actual disabled person and what that experience is like for them.
Yeah, their actual autonomy and, like, you know, did they consent to go viral and things like that? It's not just, like, promposals are, like, my big example, but like it goes for, you know, there was like a news story about an autistic young man who got a job at Starbucks and that went viral. And I'm like, why is it a viral story that a disabled person got a job? I honestly don't understand that. Shouldn't this story be about job inequality for disabled people? How can we make jobs more accessible for them? Like, shouldn't those be the stories that we're reading? Not, oh, good on this one guy who hired a disabled person, pat on the back, cookies for you, trophies for you. I don't see what's so great about someone doing, you know, the most basic decency, the most basic equality that should be already normalized, but isn't. I can already hear the, you know, the comeback for that. Like, well, it's not normalized yet, so we should be rewarding it whenever we see it. Sure, but that's not the conversation. Nobody's even trying to normalize it. They sensationalize it every time. So that's not really valid either. You can't say we should reward it in order to normalize it when you're not trying to. You're just sensationalizing it whenever you see it.
Yeah, I think that's a really important distinction because if you're talking about normalizing it, wouldn't normalizing it, showing the reality that a lot of disabled folks are up against an ableist world that does not, you know, afford them the same opportunities and afford them, you know, the same basic things that we take for granted, if we're talking about normalization, it seems to me that we should be reflecting this very serious reality, and that an autistic young man getting a job at a Starbucks, it may fill people with warm fuzzies for some reason, but the reality is that people with disabilities, they're often, you know, saddled with this unfair, ableist society that doesn't afford them these opportunities all too often, and that reality is right. perhaps more difficult to show, and maybe it doesn't give anybody warm fuzzies, and you don't walk away from that feeling, you know, like you've done something good or that you're a quote-unquote good person, but that's the actual reality. But we're not showing that. We're showing the one that gives warm fuzzies to people who watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate what I said, is just then if your idea of rewarding them is sensationalizing them, the person who did the hiring, right? Because notice how we'll never in these stories really hone in and talk to the disabled person about how they feel about whatever's going on. It's always about the person who hired them or the person who asked them out. It's always about, you know, because people view any kindness or equality that a disabled person gets as charity, right? And so then this charity should be rewarded. But if we were really serious about it, about, you know, humanizing a disabled person, giving them their autonomy, we should be talking to them first. And then we should be, asking ourselves these questions and turning these questions into action. We should be talking about job inequality. We should be talking about accessibility. We should be talking about why is this a story? Why is it headline news that a disabled person got a job or that maybe they got asked out to prom? Why is that news? And how do we fix the fact that it's news? How do we create a more equal society where this isn't a headline? This isn't shocking to people anymore. And so far, you know, that is not the mainstream conversation. It ends at let's pat the person on the back who did the quote charity that, asterisk isn't really charity.
Totally. So I actually found your video that I love. If folks haven't seen it on YouTube, they should definitely check it out. Your video on the idea of, quote, overcoming disability. So after Stephen Hawking died, I saw so many kind of, I assume, well-meaning stories about how he, quote, overcame his disability and went on to be great. And I even saw this image that I think, I would say, went viral, where it's Stephen Hawking, it's his chair kind of in the background, and he is standing, walking sort of into the cosmos. And kind of, I mean, I get what they are trying to depict in this image, right? Like, in the afterlife, he can walk, and he doesn't need his chair and all of that. But when you actually think about that, it's really a super problematic sentiment that, you know, that would depict somebody in the afterlife that way. I was surprised to see that image go viral. Clearly, it connected with people for some reason, but I was really surprised to see that image sort of all over the place.
Yeah, well, I can very easily tell you what people connected with. And again, it's this objectification of disabled people that they, especially wheelchair users, people think it's very telling that the word people used over and over and over again was that Stephen Hawking is now free of his wheelchair.
Jeez.
Implying, you know, what they firmly believe, which is that a wheelchair is a trap and a wheelchair is a cage. And so that was really the big part that was very upsetting was that language too, was freedom. And there was a lot of elements that were problematic, sure, about the image, because also, from what I understand, Stephen Hawking was also an atheist and didn't believe in, like, being a human form in the afterlife anyway. He said that we would just become stardust. That's what his belief was, right? So this painting of like him in human form walking away from his wheelchair, like that's not even respectful to his beliefs either. But he, as a person, you know, didn't really talk about his wheelchair as a trap. He talked about his disability in a way that wasn't absolutely proudful, but you know, proud of it. He would say that he wouldn't have made as many discoveries as he did and know what he know what he knew and learned what he did if it weren't for his disability. He wouldn't be who he was without his disabilities. But people want to cling on to this idea that disability is the end, so much so that one of the most brilliant people on the planet was disabled, and they couldn't wait 2 seconds after he died to erase his disability from his story, to say, oh, well, you're dead, so you're not disabled anymore. Would we do that with, like, any other identity, right? Be like, you're dead, so you're not gay anymore. Like,
you're finally free.
To any other identity like that.
Yeah, you're right. People would not depict, you know, another kind of marginalized person, like a Black person, a gay person, as being free in the afterlife. And yeah, it's even in death, it's like double disrespectful because people were taking it upon themselves to kind of crap on his personal understanding of, you know, what happens when you die, and being ableist while doing it. It's like a double whammy.
Yeah, it was really bothersome. And it is a complex conversation, right? Like people got real sensitive about it. So my disability, I have a chronic illness, a degenerative disease, similar to Stephen Hawking, something that like can, you know, really slowly take away my abilities as I get older, which is EDS. And it causes a lot of chronic pain too. So people got, you know, they took it personally, and they're like, well, I would hope my disability is chronic pain, and I would hope that in death I'm not in pain anymore. I'm like, this is not invalid. Like, that's totally valid. These are very complex conversations, right? It's not just, you know, one size fits all about these things, and everybody's going to have different beliefs. Talking about the afterlife is so hard. Like, everyone has different beliefs and different fears, you know? So it's not going to be fits-all for everybody, but in regards to Stephen Hawking specifically, he was very vocal about what he believed, and he was vocal about how he felt about his disabilities, and it really, like, was just astonishing as a disabled person to see what an impact he, a disabled person, made. And that the moment he died, people wanted to erase that aspect of him, and visualize him as a completely different person. You know, like, that's kind of scary. They're like, he was a marvelous person just as he was, and people wanted to, you know, like, reanimate him into something that he wasn't. For what? That's the good question. Why, when he died, did they feel the need to reanimate him into something that he wasn't? And that's something everybody should just sit with on their own and figure out.
Yeah, that's such a good point. What are some other ways that people with disabilities are erased, where, you know, their stories and their, like, I feel like that probably happens so often where, you know, this part of someone's identity is just stripped away as if it's a shameful or bad thing.
Well, there's a couple of different ways. I'm thinking of one person example and a broad example. One person example I can think of is Frida Kahlo, who, you know, has a giant fandom at the moment. You know, millions of people in the world are giant fans of Frida Kahlo, but many of those fans, quote unquote, don't know that she was disabled. And I don't understand how, because, like, that's, you know, the majority of her art is about her disabilities. but that is the fact that a lot of people don't know that. And in fact, one of my videos is about that. It's called Why You Should Love Frida Kahlo, and it's based on this viral Tumblr post that went around that was titled the same thing, was titled Why You Should Love Frida Kahlo, and it had a bunch of like cool facts about her that completely erased the fact that she was disabled. She had polio at a really young age, I believe between like 6 and 8. And so one of her legs, her right leg, was smaller than the other. So she already had difficulty walking. Then, of course, her big bus accident when she was a teenager, which broke practically like every bone in her body. And she dealt with chronic pain and weakness and illness and miscarriages for the rest of her life, having to spend most of her life lying down in bed because of the pain. She had to make her own accessible way of painting, or which her dad created an easel for her that would like face down at her so she could paint while she laid in bed. And this is information that a lot of people just were not aware of. And like, she's one of the most famous freaking painters in the world. And people kind of just really wanted to shove her disability under the carpet and just forget that it happened. And I don't know how you can, you know, for me, her art and her disabilities, they're not really separable, but people managed to do it. I think it's really sad that people, you know, in that way, we have like such famous, marvelous people who happen to be disabled. And people just, they're so scared of disability, they don't want to remember them that way, or they don't want to think about it, things like that. You know, they make it very, very tragic. Instead of realizing that it was part of them, it was part of their experience, their life, it was part of their identity. So it's really sad that happens. But that was just like, you know, that's just one particular example. I think that in general today, we also have people who are scared of the word disability, period, of the identity disabled, period, because a lot of people think that it's a bad word. And it's actually such a huge umbrella, right? Like, you could identify as disabled if you have mental illness, if you have chronic pain, if you have chronic illness. And people are very terrified, you know, because for a long time, people, I guess, they kind of equate disabled with, like, invalid, which is really gross. You know, devalued, ugly. Definitely that, because one of the common things you get as a wheelchair user is, you're too pretty to be in a wheelchair. all those things. They have some kind of weird phantom visual in their minds about what it means to be disabled. So I'll personally get things like, you're too pretty to be in a wheelchair, you're too young to be in a wheelchair. I'll get really rude accusations of faking my disability because I stand up from my wheelchair, which, again, as I mentioned, I have a degenerative disease, so I haven't lost my ability to walk entirely yet. I can still do a few steps for short periods of time, but beyond a minute, maybe 5 minutes at the most, I need my wheelchair. I can't stand up for longer than a minute or so, really. And every time I do stand up or do anything, like maybe squat or dance a little bit, immediately people want to accuse me of not actually being disabled. So people have a particular idea in their heads about what that means. And so I just hope that we're moving in the direction where it becomes more neutral and people are more accepting of it.
Yeah, one of the things in your video that I was really struck by was this idea that, particularly when it comes to wheelchair use, people think it's a binary. Either you're completely, you know, dependent on your wheelchair or you're not. And so if someone sees you stand or not using it, they'll, you know, be like, oh, you're faking it, you're not really disabled. And that's not actually how disability works. But we see so few images of disability that actually reflect, you know, the spectrum that is disability. But, like, why? Why are we not showing a more realistic depiction of what it's actually like?
I think it, like, full circles goes back into inspiration porn. It's people like to think of most things as binary, right? They think of sexuality as binary. You're either gay or straight. There's no such thing as bi. Asterisk, of course there is. They're, you know, binary genders, black or white. A lot of people don't have room in their heads for mixed race people. So for a lot of people, I think it's just simpler and easier to think of it in that way. But then again, a lot of it falls under media representation and the stories that people choose to tell. In Hollywood, in media, in television, disabled people don't really often get to tell their own stories. It's able writers writing disabled characters. And so already they think they're doing a terrible service just by writing a disabled character. But then they write the disabled character as what they believe it means to be disabled. And then on top of that, not just that we get, you know, this awful misrepresentation about what it means and how life is and how we feel, because the biggest example I can give you is that the majority of, like, wheelchair users that exist on TV and in movies, they hate their life. They're like, the only goal I have in my life is to not be in this wheelchair. And that's pretty much just a cookie cutter, like, character for any character with a wheelchair in media. But then they, you know, twist the knife even further, and pretty much any time in a movie or a TV show that you see someone stand up from a wheelchair, it is to reveal that the person is faking and deceiving somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
So far, I have never seen a wheelchair user stand up on TV or in a movie just because that's what is in their ability to do. It's always with a dun dun dun, like telenovela reveal. And you know, it's the disabled villain trope too. It's she probably was disabled and now she's faking it and all this stuff. It's pretty exhausting. I really honestly blame media for that kind of belief, because if people, they just eat it up. They just eat it up. And, you know, if it isn't normalized in the media either. And so people believe what they see. And so now real life disabled people, they get harassed, accused, assaulted in public if they stand up from their chair. Weirdly enough, even when you let go of your cane for a second, people will have bad reactions. I had a friend of a friend once say in front of me, yeah, I was arguing with this old man with a cane, and all of a sudden he started... he raised his cane and started pointing around at things. So I guess he really didn't need that cane, huh? This person was fired up, so I couldn't even, like, correct that. And the guy was the villain in the story. So I'm like, this is such a weird moment to, like, have to correct that. But just because somebody's waving their cane around doesn't mean they don't need it. But it was comments like that that really made me feel unsafe. Like, it's like, You really believe in your mind that because somebody picks up their cane or doesn't lean on their cane, pointing at something with their cane, that means they don't need it? Why? Why would you think that?
And also, it's not like...
It just shows the ignorance of it all.
It is ignorant. And, I mean, how many people out there are faking needing a cane? It's like this reality that doesn't exist, right? Like, it's so doubling down on, I think, tropes about disability that we've seen in media that we think it's real, but I don't feel like it is real.
It's a conversation that's very hard to have because we don't have real statistics about it. You know, like, disability statistics are really, really hard to find, especially, like, how many people, like, are disabled in a country. Like, those statistics are so hard. We have, like, 20% of the country is disabled. But what does that mean? Like, the truth be told, a lot of people have undiagnosed disabilities. People have chronic migraines and allergies, mental illness, like, that are not documented on anything. So that statistic is likely a lot more than 20% of the country. And when it comes to statistics about faking, we just don't have any. All we can do is kind of try and trust what our experiences are. And that's where things get really muddy. Because I have, you know, large social circles of disabled people. And so what I bring to the table in my experience and observation is how often they are harassed and accused of faking their disabilities when they are not. Most of them have chronic illnesses and use mobility aids to help them get around. Without them, they wouldn't be able to. But they're not paralyzed or entirely reliant on those mobility aids. But then if I speak with someone who is one of those angry people who is on the hunt for disability fakers, they'll tell me in response to something like, I don't think that really happens. They'll say, yes, because I know a person, they told me that they fake it just to get their disability parking pass or whatever. And all I can respond with is, like, that's such a freaking anomaly. So it's like, that rarely happens. And people can still be wrong. Unless somebody fully admits to you, to your face, says, hey, I'm faking this thing because I want this thing, then you will never know. I think somebody also said, oh, I know for sure this person is faking. I'm like, why? How do you know? I'm always waiting for them to tell me this person confessed to me. That is the answer I want when I said, how do you know? The person said, I know that she's faking because she was using her cane, and then when she was about to miss the bus, she lifted up her cane and she ran to the bus. I said, that does not mean the person is faking. I can do that too. I could do that too. It's called adrenaline. It's called, like, I use a cane mainly for balance. My joints are very weak and they collapse, kind of like those wooden toys that connect the joints with a string. Basically, my joints are like thin strings, so I can easily, like, fall down and injure myself. And so while it is a risk for me to, like, sprint a few feet, when adrenaline kicks in, like, if, like, my dog is about to get injured or run into the street or something, I might risk it. I'll risk injury and, like, sprint. Like 5 feet in front of me or something. But I risked injury. I probably hurt myself. I probably am going to feel it in my muscles with myalgia pains later. But it doesn't mean that my disability isn't real. Like, so you can't even look at situations like that. Somebody hobbling and then going and then running doesn't mean that they're not disabled or that they're faking it. The only answer I'm willing to accept is somebody confessing to you that that's what's up, because your observations, they're not 100% foolproof evidence of that.
We'll pick up the conversation after a quick break.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire.
with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back.
This is sort of a larger point or a larger frustration of mine, but when people sort of appoint themselves the medical professional of a stranger. So they'll say like, oh, you know, you're not really disabled because I saw you do X, or, you know, you can't be healthy because you are, you know, heavier. I don't know how we got to a place in this society where strangers will assert that they know something about your personal, like, medical or physical body when they don't even know you. Like, who is this person who is watching someone run for the bus and then, you know, making this giant leap, this giant claim about their body? It's just, I will never understand it, and I don't know how we got to this place as a country, as a world.
I try and figure that out, too. I try, and I think that there's, like, a parallel with, like, beauty and status with it. I think that once we started, because, like, once upon a time, the huge beauty narrative in our media and in advertising was, you have to be thin, whatever it takes, right? Oh, everything was whatever it takes, whatever it takes. Self-harm, do whatever you got to do, but you got to be curvy, you got to be skinny, whatever the body trend of the moment is. Very recently, it became about health, right? You, like, the healthy body is the most ideal body now. And people try to play games with that wording so much. They're like, I'm okay as long as they're healthy. Da, da, da. And it's always very judgmental. And it's judgmental because now health is such, it always has been, but really now, especially in regards to, like, beauty, like, able status, right? People are really, really judgmental because they're insecure about their own stuff. They're insecure about where they stand in regards to their health. And it doesn't mean that they're not healthy right now. In fact, a lot of them, you know, they prioritize their health, but it's more about their insecurity about, you know, that kind of thing ever happening to them. There's, you know, for people, their biggest fear is to become fat. Their biggest fear is to become disabled. And it's not something they even try to hide. Like, people will see me, total strangers will see me in public in my wheelchair and say to me, "You're so brave. I would kill myself if I were you." which is not a compliment, but they, poor little angels, bless their hearts, think so. They think that it's a compliment. And it's just the entire picture is just very, very sad. And I thought that quote compliment is disturbing and just such a sad reminder about what people think about disability. You know, it all comes full circle. It's that people have this unquestioned belief system about disability. They're just ready to believe that it's tragic, that it's ugly, that it's the end of something. When people say something like, you're so brave because you use a wheelchair. So I've had people say, I don't know how you do it. They say, I wouldn't be able to do it. First, those kind of comments are based on misrepresentation. They likely don't know any other disabled people in real life. All they know, all they have to go on is based on the movies and TV. And like I said, all those characters hate themselves because they use a wheelchair, which is not based on reality. I mean, sure, there might be, you know, people who that does reflect their reality, but that's certainly not everyone. And the second thing I have to say is that you can't say, I wouldn't be able to do that if I were you, or I'm not as brave as you, or whatever. People don't know what they're capable of until they're in it. And clearly, I haven't been a wheelchair user my entire life. My abilities, I started losing my abilities about 3 or 4 years ago. Losing my ability to walk. Now my arms are a lot weaker as well. Mainly my hands. Like sometimes I have difficulty cutting food because basically all my joints are just, you know, strings or jello, just very weak, very fragile. So there's been moments where it's been very scary. But it's my body and my life, and you just have to, you know, work with what you got. I'm not like this because I'm tough or because I'm brave. It's because it's my life, and people need to kind of get that picture together that honestly, we're all probably going to be disabled at one point or another. People equate getting old or becoming an elder with being disabled, right? They're like, oh, I'm going to be old. I'm going to have to use a walker. I'm going to have to use a cane or whatever. So that's disability. We're all probably going to be in that space at one point or another in our lives. And it doesn't have to be such a scary thing, especially if we're all, you know, prepared for it in an emotional, psychological, physical way.
Well, yeah, that's why I love so much of what folks like yourself are doing, where you are sort of showing, hey, disability is not, you know, a dirty word. I saw this shirt on your Twitter, Disabled Joy, and, you know, it's we don't allow for disabled folks to be happy, love their lives. I'm thinking about this story that I found out when I was researching for this episode. This teenager who is an author, Melissa Shang, she's 14, she wanted to write a book about a character who looks like her. She's in a wheelchair. And so she came up with this character who is in a wheelchair, who loves YouTube, who's very happy, who has a great, happy life. And when she went to pitch this book, publishers were like, oh, people aren't going to buy, you know, she's too happy. People aren't going to buy that she's in a wheelchair and that she has a great life that she loves. Or could you make her give her a sister, and her sister isn't in a wheelchair, and she is? That's a more interesting story. But what they're actually saying is, we need to understand this character through the lens of somebody who's able-bodied, because otherwise people's heads will explode. And if this character who is in a wheelchair is just a happy-go-lucky 14-year-old who loves YouTube and ponies or whatever, people won't buy it because she's not sad enough. And I think that really shows a lot about how we, what we think about disability and the stories that we're willing to sort of accept. You know, I was really, you know, I remember seeing on Twitter this activist Kia Brown with her hashtag disabled and cute, right? Like, the stories that we tell about folks who are disabled are so limiting, and it's like we're so not comfortable with anything else. If it's not, I'm disabled and hate my life, or I'm disabled and, you know, it's awful, we just don't, it's just, it, and I'm not saying those stories don't exist, because sure, they probably do. Like, able-bodied people hate their lives, right? Like, but if we only allow for that one story, you know, it's all we see.
Right. Well, if we did it to any other, I'm going to go back to, like, gay representation. Again, I'm gay, I identify as queer. Like, and that's also something that we're just now starting to see more of. But once upon a time in gay representation, it was just suicidal gay people or gay people who had been victims of violence or murdered. And so that was just like one take on what it meant to be gay. It meant that you either became ill and died, were violently attacked and died, or you hated your life so much you committed suicide. That once upon a time, those were like the only stories gay people really got to see. And now it's kind of like spreading into more, and hopefully more keep coming, more happy endings, more diversity in regards to LGBT representation. But that is kind of what's happening right now, I think, with disabled representation, is like people are only accepting this one take. And, you know, if you don't live in a very diverse place, if you don't have a diverse group of friends, that's all you have. All you have is what you get through the TV and the movie screen. And so those are the only ways you can form opinions about groups of people. And it breeds prejudice with people who, you know, are only surrounded by their own communities. I'm thinking specifically of, like, you know, middle America, where, like, it's not very diverse in certain spaces. I really hope for that. I really hope that we're in a time where, like, disabled people are really starting to be heard. I hope so. It's because the erasure has been very, very heavy. A story that I'll mention sometimes is that in the same year that the Pulse massacre happened, which was hit me very hard, Pulse was a place that I used to go to all the time when I lived in Orlando, even before that. And I feel like my little gay heart, like, grew up in that place in a way. About a month after that happened, and we saw, like, you know, so many, like, large spaces, you know, light their buildings up in rainbows and support. And, like, it was a moment where people kind of acknowledged the hatred that LGBT people face. And they wanted to show their support. They wanted to say, we know that some people out there hate you and some people are willing to murder you, but know that you are supported and that the community has your back. And then the following month, it wasn't U.S., but it was still very vital. In Japan, there was a massacre, the second largest massacre Japan has ever had. A man went in to a disabled community home at night and massacred a lot of them. I think that he ultimately murdered 19 people and injured, I think, like 20 to 40 more. And it was an ableist massacre. It was an ableist attack. He had pre-written to Parliament that disabled people were a burden on the economy and a burden on their families, and that he knew how to get rid of them, and that he said that he could get rid of hundreds of them in one night for the betterment of the country. And then when that happened, there was no international response. There was no response, period. And that, like, it really, really hit me. Again, like, this was 1 month after Pulse. I was already, like, in a depression from that. And then my depression got worse because of the silence. The only people I saw talking about this story were other disabled people. And it kind of felt like disabled people were, like, screaming, like, look at this, look at this, look at what happens. Look at how ableism kills people, and nobody cared. And it just felt like nobody would care if we disappeared. And that is the message that just keeps being told all the time. Again, it goes back to Stephen Hawking, right? Like, he became one of the most marvelous, brilliant people on the planet. And he died, and the first thing people want to do is erase his disability. People are constantly sending the message they don't want disability to exist. They don't want anybody to be different. They don't want anybody to have any different needs from them or different ways of stimming or being, quote, weird around them or look weird for them. They would rather just us all be gone. I say all that with the intention of kind of rounding up, like, that is the deep, dark space where all these kind of biases and assumptions about disability comes from. The bottom line for a lot of people is that they wish that disability wasn't real. The bottom line is that a lot of people think that it is a burden and it is tragic. But optimistically, I hope that that's the last time something like that happens. Not just the violence, but the lack of response. I hope that the more visibility we have for disabled people, the more people will care, the more people will learn, and they'll see us as actually human, as opposed to burdens, which a lot of them do.
That is so real. I mean, damn. And I think it's the silence, right? It's this awful thing happened after Pulse, and just the silence, because it did barely rate. There was no international outcry. And I think it does come back to exactly what you just said about, you know, whether it's the lack of, you know, disabled representation in media, movies, films, or it's the silence when 19 disabled people are murdered. You know, I feel like both of those kind of come from the same space. And I think you're right. It's this discomfort. It's this, we don't even want to deal with it. We don't even want to see it. We don't want to acknowledge it in any of the ways. So we've talked quite a bit about, you know, how folks with disabilities sort of are not well represented. Who out there is sort of getting it right? Are there content creators or films or movies where you think, I want to see more of this kind of thing when it comes to representation?
Well, first, Speechless, which is a sitcom on ABC, is doing a really cool job. And they do have disabled writers on staff, too. They have Zach Anner, which is a comedian, actor, YouTuber. It was really great in the first season. For the first time ever, I saw the characters use the term inspiration porn. I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. It's like getting some, like, visibility for, like, disability culture. And they, like, you know, did a 101 with it. They're like, I think the disabled character was being used in someone's essay, and And he said, oh, great, he's using me as inspiration porn. And somebody says, what's that? And someone responds to him, it's the objectification of disabled people to for the feel goods of able-bodied people. So I thought that was really, like, brilliant moment on television and got really it got me really excited. The switched at birth, I heard, is kind of debatable, but they had a lot of deaf actors on that show. I think anybody who was a deaf character was also deaf in real life. That was really great. I'm sure I'm missing quite a few things. Like, there's been, like, other things. I'm a big advocate for disabled people playing disabled characters, meaning, of course, disabled actors playing disabled characters. Because that's another bias and discrimination in the workplace that happens. People will hire able-bodied people to play wheelchair users, and they don't even give wheelchair-using actors an opportunity because oftentimes their audition spaces aren't wheelchair-accessible. Like, there's no elevator into the audition room. So that's another workplace discrimination thing that happens. And besides that, you know, I think, you know, people creating their own original content is a beautiful thing. So I think YouTube is a beautiful thing. There's Jessica Kellgren Hayes on there, who she does a really great job at, you know, showcasing her life as a disabled lesbian. She also has a connective tissue disorder and POTS, so very relatable for me. Also, Chronically Jackie is doing the chronically ill reality show of our dreams. She produces a video every day of her life with chronic illnesses, and she is one of the only times I get to see, you know, on video somebody who is like me, who, like, uses a wheelchair but can walk around a little bit still and things like that. So I'm just hoping, you know, internet content creation is kind of small in relativity to, you know, mainstream media, like Hollywood or television. But it's still big enough that I truly believe that it can make an impact. So for now, the real true, like, heroes for me are the people that are creating their content on websites like YouTube.
In your video, you talk about how the language of overcoming disability sometimes pits disabled people against each other. Can you explain that a bit to us?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, Jesus, I took 7 minutes to say all that in my video. But, so overcoming disability, in short, I don't like it because it implies that, whatever is being done with a disability, that action and the disability are mutually exclusive, which, if you're using the term overcoming disability, that is clearly false. It's an oxymoron that you just did. But the other way that is used is people who, you know, rehabilitate or recover from something. Specifically, it'll be used in regards to, like, a doctor saying, oh, they'll never do this action. Or let's just say, oh, he'll never walk again. And then look at him now, he's walking. Prove that doctor wrong or whatever. And people will use stories like that of, like, these, quote, miraculous recoveries to put pressure on other disabled people to do the same thing. And that'll come from, like, family, friends, our bosses, anybody. They're like, if this disabled person can do it, why can't you? And the implication there is that you're lazy if you don't try as hard as that person to not be disabled anymore. which all that is very toxic because it's not going to be the same for everyone. And also, sometimes doctors can be wrong. Sometimes doctors say this person's never going to walk again, see again, whatever is the case at the moment. And they are just wrong. It's not some kind of miracle. It's not because the person tried harder than other people. Sometimes they're just wrong and things change. And it also just introduces us to the belief that people have that if you are not trying to not be disabled, then you're not worthy of anyone's time. Then you are a lazy person. You are a burden to them because you're not trying hard enough to not be disabled anymore. which is so toxic. Some people just, they're disabled and that's it. Like, sorry. They're not going to change. They're not going to get, quote, better. And instead of inviting them to hate themselves for it, it would be much healthier to, you know, accept what's going on, not to give up on your health necessarily. That's not what I mean either, but accept what's going on, try to enjoy your life anyway, and do what you got to do. I think, so I have, again, RP, a degenerative disease, and I'm very accepting of where my body is at while it's there. I do continue to push my body and push my limits, and I focus on my health as best as I can, but I won't hate myself for being sick, and I won't hurt myself just to prove that that I'm capable of certain things. I have to care about myself, and I have to love myself and love my life, no matter what it looks like, no matter what's going on. I just have to find the gratitude and the acceptance of that moment. But again, because of ableism, people would rather pressure disabled people to no longer be disabled and tell them that it's their failure if they're unable to accomplish that.
Right. I think there's this weird mentality of, if I did something, if I worked this hard to do whatever, then you can too. Like what you said earlier about being lazy, that there's this perception of laziness, which is completely wrong and totally ignorant.
I mean, especially in regards to like invisible illness too. Like a lot of people just have trouble believing how fragile my ligaments are because of my appearance. I'm like a thicker, maybe chubby, brown woman and a tall woman. And so when I walk around, like, I think I probably have the appearance of someone who's, like, young and strong. But the truth is that I have the fragility of what some would assume would be of a, like, 99-year-old woman. Which is ageism, by the way, because not all elderly people are disabled. I think it's hard to look at people with invisible illnesses and remember, like, what their experiences are. And then sometimes it's not remember, sometimes it's just to believe. Sometimes people just don't believe what's going on inside your body. And that's really scary. I think it's really scary as a person that's fragile and sick and doesn't really look like it on the outside. It then creates an environment where people have really high expectations of my abilities and I have to constantly let them down or feel forced to push my limits and harm myself because of those expectations. Because personally, I feel pressure once I make a commitment to something. And so I will push myself beyond my limits. I will probably harm myself just to complete that commitment. But, I do wish in my personal life that, like, people would have more consideration for that. But people can't consider those things if they forget your condition or if they don't believe in your condition. So all that's really hard.
Annie, thank you so, so much for being here today. Where can folks find out more about all the cool things you're up to?
Well, I am online everywhere as Annie Elaney. That's AnnieElaney. On YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and I am Annie Segarra on Facebook. That's it, I think.
Yeah, I can't tell you how instrumental your YouTube videos have been for me when I was feeling, again, kind of grossed out about that Stephen Hawking stuff we were talking about earlier in the episode. Your videos just nailed how I was feeling. So if you haven't seen Annie's videos, definitely check them out because they are amazing.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, definitely overcoming disability was a little bit of a subtweet about all that Stephen Hawking stuff, too.
I loved it. Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I had a good time.
Well, that was a really enlightening conversation, and I am so glad we got the chance to talk to Annie about this, and I really hope that we'll see more of these diverse stories soon. And I hope that you listeners enjoyed that conversation as well, and we would love to hear from you. You can find us at Stuff Mom Never Told You on Instagram or at Mom Stuff Podcast on Twitter. Or you can always send us an email, momstuff@howstuffworks.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic, that's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.